Estes, keeping up with the newest and professional grade skincare brands can be a full-time job in and of itself, right? I know I'm always on the hunt for the hottest, coolest, most results-driven new brands to recommend to my clients. Like Hydrinity, their products have changed the game for my clients who struggle with dry skin and pigmentation. Thankfully, adding Hydrinity to my clients' skincare routines is easier than ever now because of Pomp. Pomp's brand education allows me to explore new brands I want to get educated on and then pick and choose my favorite products to recommend to my clients. We love a little cherry picking moment sometimes. We don't always want to bring on the whole line, and Pomp is the solution. Visit the show notes for my personal Pomp Beauty referral link to get started expanding your brand knowledge today. Hello, guys. Welcome back to the Treatment Room Podcast with your host, Tessa Zolli. We have just a great episode in store for you today. We are going to be talking all about acne vulgaris. Acne is the most prominent condition you will see in the treatment room. We just see so much of it, yet please tell me why we barely cover acne at all in esthetician school. I think most Estes can agree we graduate knowing almost nothing about how to treat acne. And that is something I'm very passionate about changing. I'm passionate about this as far as sharing more information with consumers and more professionals as well, so we can better understand this condition, so we can kind of demystify it and understand that it is treatable. There's definitely help available to you if you are struggling with your skin. Acne is the number one condition that I treat in my virtual practice. It's so close to my heart because I had my own struggles with acne. I've been able to get my skin totally clear, but still feels like yesterday that I started struggling with this condition, and it can really rock your mental health, your confidence, impact your closest relationships. So I am just so passionate about acne education. So we're going to talk more about acne today. We're going to talk about how it starts, how it's treated, and we're also going to touch on the benzene and benzoyl peroxide little recent controversy, because I just think this is important industry news. And with us today, we have a returning guest, one of my favorite people on the planet. She is one of the most credible sources we could possibly talk to about this topic, acne. So without further ado, let's welcome Jan Marini to the show.
Thank you, Tessa. It's always such a pleasure. It's one of my favorite topics. I'm so glad that we get to revisit it.
Me too. I feel like as a skin professional, I'm seeing more acne than ever. Would you agree acne has become an epidemic? And do you have any idea why the numbers seem to be rising so much?
It truly is an epidemic. That is actually something that the medical community will validate. And it's really among adult females. Now, I'm not leaving men out. But the reason I say adult females is because men typically don't have acne the way females do past the age of 23. They reach terminal beard growth. The beard reaches its full diameter, pushes everything out of the follicle. So that's why we're really focusing more on adult females. And I'm going to say that there's several reasons, which we can get into more later, that have an effect on adult acne. And a good deal of it, in my opinion, has to do with diet. Now, there's also a hormonal component, but it's related in some respects to diet. And I think that acne really affects an individual's self-image and their self-esteem. And I know, Tessa, you come across this all the time. But I hear people say, well, you know, I had acne as a teenager, wasn't that bad, kind of went away, got a little better. And then when I was in my 20s or my 30s, it came back with a vengeance. And maybe that person had acne on their cheeks or their forehead. Now it's on the jawline, its chin, its perioral, and it's more of the nodular mini cysts.
Exactly.
Which are really difficult to address. Or you have people that didn't have any acne as a teenager, which is really only the 1 to 2 percentile. And then all of a sudden they manifest it with it in their, like maybe when they turn 20 or they're in their 20s or later on when they're 30s. And so there's so many of these configurations, it is surprising. But we just see so much of it today. And I rarely ever run into somebody that doesn't have acne. A lot of times people will say, well, I don't have acne, I just break out once in a while. It's acne. Those are acne lesions, the same process. Or if you pull your skin and you run your finger over it and you feel bumps, that's acne. It's not just kind of obvious, ongoing, consistent breakouts all the time. It's clogged pores, it's all of those things. And so it's a huge, huge, huge issue today, which is why we're talking about it.
Absolutely. And I do see so many clients like you were referring to who are in their mid-30s, who are starting to experience acne again later in life. Is there any reason for that? Does it have to do with a hormonal change?
Well, you know, there's, again, we can kind of talk about the diet component. So first of all, there's a couple of issues. One is that we now know that milk causes acne. This has absolutely been confirmed. And it was a study done on 47,000 nurses. It was repeated on their sons and daughters. And then there was a separate study of 3,000 teenage girls, 3,000 teenage boys. It's not because we give hormones to cattle. It's because we milk them when they're pregnant. So they're producing steroidal hormones. Now, it's milk, it's ice cream, it's and particularly whey protein. Whey protein is added to non-fat milk to make it look like it is thicker and it's richer looking because it can look very thin and watery. But a whey protein is used in protein bars. It's used in protein drinks. It's used in so many things. Unless you look at the label, I'm surprised how many things have whey protein added. I'm not even sure why, but that is a very concentrated form. And so that's something that it can absolutely contribute. Now, the second part of this, when we talk about diet, has to do with the glycemic load. So now the glycemic index is really obvious. If you look at a candy bar, you know it's got a lot of sugar. But the glycemic load is how much sugar is it turned into in terms of how much does your liver dump into your bloodstream? So it's very deceiving because the analogy I always like to use is the whole wheat bread analogy, a piece of whole wheat bread or a quarter cup of sugar. The bread will turn into more sugar than if you ate the quarter cup of sugar. Now, why is that important? The fact we all know that sugar is not necessarily good for you. It attaches to every cell in your body. But sugar is a carb. And so it affects our insulin levels and our blood sugar levels. And we tend to have, in the U.S., pretty high-carb diet for the most part. Let's just say you sit down and you have a nice pasta dinner and some garlic bread and then a nice dessert. Your insulin levels are going to go really high. And so for the most part, for a lot of people, your insulin levels are constantly going up and down and spiking. And one of the things that the body does, and it's not able to handle it as much as an adult, although this happens in teenagers as well, is that our bodies produce, in females, more testosterone to take down and stabilize insulin levels. You want your insulin levels to be really stable all the time. And so, so when we're producing more testosterone, this adds into another issue. So you can have a very mild testosterone sensitivity, or you can be producing a little free testosterone. Now, it's estimated that the majority of females who have adult female acne have this sensitivity or producing a little free testosterone. So in your follicles, you have enzymes, isozyme type 1 and isozyme type 2, known as 5-A reductase. It's harmless. You have them in your hair follicles, in your scalp. And outside of your follicles, you've got hormones. You have estrogen, progesterone, testosterone. We have a lot of testosterone, but it's bound by proteins. It's like having a sack around it, so you don't get a deep voice, you don't get a hairy chest and a beard. But if there's a little bit of a sensitivity, and here's the thing, it doesn't show up in just your average blood test. There's a wide range of normal in sort of that hormonal range. And so what happens, though, is maybe there's a little sensitivity, or it gets together with the enzymes in the follicle. They shake hands and they form dihydrotestosterone. And it is literally instant acne. And usually where it shows up is the chin, perioral, the jawline. That's typically where you're going to see it. Now, it can be anywhere, but that's where you see it so much in adult females. It's very, very difficult to address. People go on antibiotics, gets better, go off the antibiotics, it comes back. They go on Accutane, they go into remission, it comes back. I mean, it's just a very stubborn situation. Now, there is no cure for acne. We don't want to hear that, but there's no cure for acne. Accutane is not a cure. When we talk about Accutane, we talk about remission, which can be short-lived or it can be maybe a number of years. But Tessa, how many people have you seen that have been on Accutane and you're able to say, oh yes, their skin is better. They're not having a terrible cystic condition, but they still break out.
Most people at some point do break out again. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And there are actual statistics on that I can quote as to who gets completely clear in the beginning, you know, roughly how long they're going to stay clear, who doesn't get clear. And the good news is that you can manage acne and you can get complete total clearing. You can do that. So this is really what we're talking about, is how do you manage it? And oh my God, if we had a dime or a dollar for every, inflation, it's got to be a dollar, for every supposed acne remedy that's out there, we would be very rich. And how many of them actually work?
Very few.
Truly. I mean, and the interesting thing is that I talk to people who sometimes will stay on these for such a long period of time, suffering with these breakouts, thinking because somebody's told them, well, you just, you know, it might take 6 months, might take a year, you know, you should give it. For every month you've had acne, or every year you've had acne, you should give it 5 months to clear. Well, if you've had acne for 3 months, every time you break out, that can be another scar. You do not have to suffer that way. You can get clearing very rapidly. And even in certain severe cases of acne, I mean, it's amazing how quickly it starts to clear up. So you can manage it and you can get complete total clearing. And I think that's where there's a lot of confusion and people don't understand. I think it's important to kind of go through the acne process, because there's so much mythology about what causes acne or what it really is.
Is this mystery, I'd say, the average person just doesn't really understand. So yeah, please feel free to clarify kind of how acne starts.
Well, acne, first of all, is a term that's used to describe or identify a process. So again, even mild breakouts or acne, occasional breakouts, it's still an acne lesion. It doesn't mean you break out all the time. If you have clogged follicles, it's a really mild form of acne. But it's all acne. And it's just a matter of the frequency and the severity of it. And so, first of all, acne is not an infection. It's an inflammatory process. Now, if you've ever squeezed an acne lesion and you get what looks like pus out of it, of course, you think about it as being an infection, but it's not. And so when we talk about the process, it's like painting a picture in your mind. And when you look at your skin, when you look at the stratum corneum, that outer layer, And you look at follicles, and they're actually, we call them pores, but they're really sebaceous follicles. You're looking at the opening into a long hollow tube about as big around as the diameter of a hair. So acne starts in the follicle. And this is where some of this mythology starts, because we think, gee, if we just clean our skin more, if we use certain scrubs, if we use these things, they can't get down inside the follicle. And so in the follicle, you have this long hollow tube, and at the bottom you have your sebaceous glands. Now, this hollow tube is lined with dead cells. So our stratum corneum has dead cells that are constantly shedding, about 500 million a day. We're just not even aware of it. Well, inside the follicle, you've got these dead cells. So they're shedding. Now, one of the reasons we have oil is not because it's going to keep you young forever. It pushes the cells to the surface. They sit there and they fall off. That's what's supposed to happen. We don't really understand, with regard to acne, why this pathology develops. Now, I'm going to stop here for a second, because they are still trying to come up with an acne vaccine. And one of the first ones, this was, I announced this several years ago, and it was the UCLA out of San Diego, or not UCLA, because that's the University of Los Angeles, but this University of San Diego, but it's in the UC medical group. And, you know, these things can take, you know, 10 years or more. And the idea was, is that it might prevent acne in teenagers, but also would be able to more rapidly decrease it in adults. And what happens in the follicle is that something takes place where these cells start sticking together. Now, this could be an enzymatic or an enzyme reaction. We don't know, but this vaccine, I think, was developed to keeping the cells from sticking together. But that's the process. That's what happens in the beginning. So this is inside your follicle. You can't get down there. You can't get down there with a needle. And when these cells stick together, it forms what's called a microcomedo. That's the beginning of the acne process. There's no such thing as acne without a microcomedo. And so this microcomedo can be dormant for days, weeks, months. It can flare up at different times. And certainly in teenagers or in adolescence, when a girl, for example, goes into adolescence, and that's marked by breast development, not menstruation. So think about this. They can be 8 or 9 years old. Their skin can be perfect. I see this time and time again. And the microcomedones can form slowly over this period of time. And maybe they're 11 or 12 before they actually start breaking out. And once the microcomedone kind of gets really active, it goes in a number of different directions. Now, the mildest form of acne would be where these cells stick together and they stick together, but it causes the follicle to dilate, and you see that as a clogged pore, a blackhead, open comedone. That's a mild form of acne. Now, when you don't see that follicle opening, but inside the follicle, these cells are sticking together and sticking together, what happens is that it traps C. acne bacteria. Now, C. acne bacteria is something we all have. You can have perfect skin. You can have a lot of colonies on the outside. They can be everywhere. But if they get trapped in the follicle with these cells, and there's virtually no oxygen in there, and the cells keep sticking together, the bacteria thrives because it feeds off of the oil, trapped oil. And then it excretes this fatty acid byproduct. Now, it's the byproduct that is really, really the problem, because what it does is it's very corrosive and it wears down your follicle walls. And by the way, it's hereditary as to how flexible your follicles are. Some people, shoot, you expose it to this fatty acid and right away they start breaking out. Other people, the follicles can actually get pretty big inside before they literally rupture. But at some point, you get a leak, a rupture, or a blowout. So, guys, when you have a little papule or a pustule on top of your skin, that's because you've had a leak near the top of the follicle. And so it's not a real severe type of lesion. But if your follicle ruptures down in the middle, more material goes outside. It's more inflammation, and the lesion you're going to get on the surface is going to be the nodule or the mini cyst. You can't squeeze them out. They're harder and they may or may not scar, and I'm going to define scar. A lot of times people say, well, I'm scarred, and they have discoloration. That's not a scar. A scar is an injury to the dermis. So your dermis has been compromised deep down, and it you see that on the surface as like an ice pick scar, a boxcar scar, a rolling scar, a divot, something like that. You know, there's different, more severe types of scars. And if you have a literally your follicle, we've referred to it as a blowout. So it looks like the entire side of the follicle blew up. You have a lot of material that comes outside. That's deeper. That hits the dermis. That's when you get the scarring and you get the big cysts. So as it makes its way to the surface, it can destroy collagen and elastin. Now, that's the basic process that happens, that you get acne. But again, there's a solution and you can manage it. And one of the things that, the other thing that I think people, another myth is that, well, I managed it, I got rid of it, I'm clear and I don't have to do anything.
Right.
And of course, all your beautiful work, I'm sure that that just sometimes just frustrates you to no end, because you have this gorgeous work, and you sent me some before and after pictures. By the way, guys, this is the acne guru. And she sent me some before and after pictures that are just so stunning. So you really do need to seek Tessa out. But the problem is, you do all that work and everything, and then it's literally has to be managed every day. And I always say I'm a two-time Accutane failure. You guys, you can't see my skin, but I've done podcasts with Tessa, so you can look at it there. I always get up real close and show, you know, you don't really see follicles. You don't see anything. And I never break out. But it's because of what I do every single day. If I miss a day, I will break out. It's not magic.
No. It's a daily commitment, and it's a commitment to the products and the lifestyle. I think that's how I'm able to really get a different type of result, is really stressing that we have to look at both the internal and the external. It's really hard to get somebody clear with just one. And I think that's why so many people do struggle, and they don't get the same professional result, because they're not aware of all the triggers, and they're probably not treating their skin as, I guess I say aggressively, but I really just mean appropriately, as a professional would, who's checking in with them and accelerating them as needed. Versus just, you know, trying one acne product and staying on that for maybe a year or so. You really need that acceleration.
Kind of a little bit like the difference between when you are exercising on your own and maybe doing a relatively good job, but then if you have a professional trainer and that trainer is constantly looking objectively at your physique, and they're constantly in your stamina and all that, and they're pushing in a safe, measured manner. And so it's kind of like that in a way. Sometimes it's hard for us to be subjective. But again, the good news is there really is a solution. Now, what the system does is the system helps interrupt the acne process. And one of the products in the system, which I always focus on because it's a good example of how it can be so multifaceted, is BioClear. And BioClear is glycolic, salicylic, and azelaic acid. Now, azelaic acid is sold by prescription for acne, sold by prescription for rosacea. It is also one of the best resurfacing agents we've seen for the appearance of fine lines and wrinkles, and it's a pigment lifting agent. Then glycolic, at very simplest level, dissolves and dislodges the glue-like substance or cellular cement in the stratum corneum, that outer layer. Now, what that does is it resurfaces the skin. And right away people go, oh my gosh, is it my imagination? My pores look smaller. Your skin looks much younger looking, smoother looking, glowing. So that's a nice side benefit. But it has a very tiny molecular weight. Now, a lot of things that we use on our skin don't get into our follicle. That's another myth. The molecules are too large. But glycolic does get into the follicle. It's got such a small molecule that it's actually used pharmaceutically in certain with certain topical drugs as a delivery system. So it goes down in the follicle, and when it gets there, it dissolves and dislodges the glue-like substance or cellular cement between cells. It interrupts the acne process. Now, that's really important, but glycolic acid has been shown to thicken the dermis by about a third. When you thicken the dermis, and your dermis is 80% collagen, so when you're getting acne scars, it's because, again, you have disturbed or destroyed collagen and elastin. So when you actually replenish that collagen, it makes a huge difference in the appearance of the scars. And here's the thing why it's really good to address this right away. You don't wait and you run to Tessa, because what happens is you've got about a year to actually work on acne scarring. And what you're producing a type of collagen that during that year's period of time, certain things can downregulate it. It's scarring collagen. So when you actually have an acne scar, think about if I threw a rock through your window of your house, the window shatters. Now, the outside is cold and it's storming. So what you're going to do is you're going to say, oh my gosh, I've got to immediately close this up. And you nail some boards on and you nail it and it looks horrible. But you know what? You're not getting rain and snow inside your house, right? Well, that's kind of what your skin does. It uses a type of collagen that says, we've just got to close this off really, really fast. And so we want to downregulate that. And you've got about a good year to do that. I know you have example after example after example. Yeah. And, you know, I do as well. But you're absolutely right. There is also that kind of lifestyle diet component that can play a real significant role.
It really does. And I think a lot of people can be resistant to those changes. It can be for so many reasons. It's difficult for them to make the lifestyle changes. They weren't raised with it, so it's a lot of ingrained habits. It might be access or affordability. And then there are also so many young people who I think have struggles with their eating habits, and they don't know how to make those changes in a way that doesn't feel restrictive to them. So it can be challenging. I think in a lot of ways, it's not always as easy as just cutting things out, but it is really important. So that's something for me I notice is a challenge in working with clients. How can we do it in a way where I'm kind of meeting them where they're at and starting with slow changes, but it is important, and it helps people clear a lot faster if they are able to implement the lifestyle changes along with the active ingredients.
And you know, I think also the other thing is that we always, every so often, we hear somebody say, "Oh yeah, I went off sugar; it was no big deal. I just one day I had sugar, and the next day I stopped eating it." You know what? I went off sugar about 10 months ago or so, maybe it's been close to a year now. And it was one of the hardest things I have ever done. It is so addictive. It hits the same receptor sites in the brain as heroin, as all of your opiates. Mm-hmm. And so there's real addiction. Your brain wants the sugar really bad. And let me tell you, your brain will lie to you for such a long time in trying to get you, because it's the closest thing that you, it's an immediate kind of fix in terms of energy. Mm-hmm. But sugar attaches to every cell in the body. It breaks down your collagen. You know, one of the things that's really interesting these days is that I find that teenagers and individuals that are just going into their 20s are obsessed with aging. And you hear this all the time. My granddaughter, who is, I think she's going to be 12, or she's turned 12 anyway. But one of the things she wanted for Christmas was a lip mask. And she's into all of these things. Now we've got her using proactively benzoyl peroxide cleanser and benzoyl peroxide leave-on. So she has no breakouts. Her skin is pristinely clear. but she wants to use eye creams and all of these things. And so here's the thing, guys, when you are eating sugar, you're causing your collagen to decrease. You're causing much faster. It's causing it to harden, fibrose. It attaches to every cell in your body. We know that in terms of aging, it is a primary factor. So even if you say, well, you know, maybe I don't buy the whole acne thing. It's so important in terms of how you're going to look 5 years and 10 years and 20 years and how you're going to feel. And one of the things I can tell you, when I did go off of sugar, and believe me, I went through some bad withdrawals, but what it does in terms of evening mood and your energy and just your overall greater sense of well-being and physicality is tremendous. I can't stress that enough.
I totally agree. And I think having balanced meals is something I like to educate more clients about, because most of them are not getting enough protein with their meals, especially at breakfast. Because what is the standard American breakfast or diet? It's cereal, waffles, bagels, croissants, coffee with sugar. And that is so important, especially for the acne sufferer, to set themselves up with more protein early in the morning to keep the blood balanced.
You need a lot of protein as you get older. And again, you know, we're talking a lot about adult acne. So these can be women in their 30s and 40s and beyond. And I get people that are in their 70s that still break out. But protein is so critical. You need it more as you get older. I eat huge amounts of protein. And that's another thing that's really hard. Yeah. So we're gonna take just a moment here and a little diet tutorial. But you know, if you envision your food into two buckets. Now, bucket number one is glucose. So again, brain loves glucose. Now, that doesn't mean that glucose is good for the brain, because it really needs fat and protein. In fact, in lots of times when children have certain brain disorders, epilepsy, or there's even some rare disorders, very often doctors will put them on a zero carb diet or a keto diet, which is extremely low carb, maybe 20 carbs or less a day, because the brain heals, the brain develops, and it needs a lot of fat and a lot of protein, but it loves glucose. Mm. Now, you've only got about 22 hours of stored glucose. That's all. So think about how fast you use that up. Your brain uses it up, goes, now I want more. And what happens is, if you have a meal where there's sugar in that meal, your body is going to use that first, and it's going to store the fat and the protein. You have thousands of hours of stored fat and protein. Now, what you want your body to do is you want it to use the fat and protein, because first of all, your insulin levels are stable. You're going to be lean and healthy and vibrant. But you have to train your brain to say, wait a minute, I'm going to go for the fat and protein and not the glucose. So now some people can do that. Some people can say, well, gee, I just have dessert once in a while and I just do it. You know, for me, I can't do that, because I'll tell you, my brain gets it once. Mm-hmm. And it's back on the warpath for more glucose.
Totally.
So I've trained it to where I'm eating, you know, on these unrefined carbs and the fat and the protein, and doing really, really well. It's not easy for everybody to get there.
It's not.
But this has a lot to do with obesity, and it has a lot to do, again, with our skin and just our health in general.
I think you make such a good point that it's not the easy way to eat. It's not convenient. It's not the way most restaurants and eateries are set up. You really have to make conscious efforts and try to implement it as a lifestyle. But I just want to acknowledge that. So if anyone's kind of struggling with this, I totally agree. It's not easy. I do think it's worthwhile, though.
It is. And I just hate it every time I hear somebody say, oh, yeah, you know, I went off sugar last month.
No big deal. Right. Or dairy. I think people struggle with that on an addictive level as well.
Sure. Exactly. I mean, My uncle had a farm, and I grew up, with all the cow milk that I could possibly drink, and loved it. Loved milk. So, and really, most of the world, with regard to dairy, most of the world, we in the U.S., we are obsessed with dairy. In most of the world, nobody gets dairy. They get nursed for a certain period of time, and nobody gets dairy after that. And that's probably in three quarters of the world's population are lactose intolerant. There's a reason for that.
Mm. Yeah. And I've noticed dairy really coming back in fashion, which is interesting. I can definitely acknowledge when it comes to health, it's not always black and white. It's not always something's healthy for you or bad for you. It's there can be pros and cons. Obviously, I think milk can be attractive to some people who would prefer to avoid processed additives, that kind of thing, and like an almond milk, oat milk. This is kind of the argument I hear for dairy, like, well, there's protein in it. It's just, you know, one substance versus 20 on a label. But when I'm seeing like all these TikTok videos and people kind of promoting dairy again, it's interesting because from an acne perspective, I know it does have its effects. So it might be healthy for, say, muscle gain, but not necessarily for the acne sufferer in skin.
Well, you know, here's the thing too. There's collagen protein, there's pea protein, there's egg protein. And by the way, one thing I want to mention, because it gets a little bit more complicated, but for some reason, most people that shouldn't have dairy, quote dairy, can have butter. Don't ask me why. Butter seems to be outside of that category. But you have to understand, the milk board also is incredibly wealthy and powerful. Do you know that the milk board actually sponsored the study with the 47,000 nurses? So I'm sure they weren't real happy about that. That study was published. I mean, it's a legit study, and it was published in the Mosby Journal of Dermatology, which is the most technical journal.
Okay.
So the study went into this in a very objective way and found out, in every single case, that milk was an exacerbating or causative factor. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's powerful, powerful lobbying groups out there, whether it is sugar. And I'll tell you, my brain sits and watches all these things on television, and my brain says, Jan, you know, you deserve, you work hard, you deserve these things. Everybody else eats them. It's just fine. It's not going to hurt you. And, you know, we see these commercials, and it's everybody's always having fun, and it's always centered around food and candy bars and, you know, all these things.
Yeah. So I totally hear the people who are frustrated with acne and trying to get their skin clear. It really isn't easy. It takes a lot of conscious effort, and it does take some sacrifice and adjustment. So I wanted to, say that. I wanted to make sure we got to touch on benzoyl peroxide a little bit, Jan, because I know there's been some breaking news in regards to BPO, which us skin professionals tend to love because it is the most effective ingredient we know of for the treatment of acne. But there was a private lab, ValleySure, that recently came out with the news that they found benzene, a known carcinogen, in benzoyl peroxide products when it was heated up. So I know we've talked about this on the phone. I know you recently put out a statement. I would love to hear your thoughts in regards to benzene and BPO.
Yeah. So the first thing I want to say is benzoyl peroxide is an over-the-counter drug. So it is controlled by the FDA. And that means that you have to manufacture it under very strict conditions. And we use an FDA-approved lab. It's called GMP, which is Good Manufacturing Practices. That's the same labs that are used for making cancer drugs or making anything. So we follow everything to the letter and beyond. Now, benzoyl peroxide, it has actually been known in the past that it can produce benzene. But it is not known whether or not that would have any effect. And I'll get to that in a moment. Because if you're working in a lab, and let's say you're making, you're around benzene all the time, because benzene, for example, is used in crazy glue, it's used in plastics, it's used in tons of things commercially, then there's going to be a lot of warning. You have to be very careful. But the skin is a barrier that is such a tough barrier that many things that we are concerned about don't go through the skin. And one of my favorite analogies is if your skin was really permeable, you'd drown in the bathtub. So first of all, I want everybody to know benzoyl peroxide has been produced commercially in the U.S. since 1927. And actually, it was invented by a Canadian doctor in the late 1800s. And it's used extensively in industry, it's used in healthcare, and it's the World Health Organization has it on their list of essential medicines, not just medicines, but essential medicines. So keep in mind that this has been how many years, if you do the math, the benzoyl peroxide has been out there in commercial use and used all over the world. In fact, my vice president of R&D, Dr. Saxena, said when he was a teenager, they didn't have it in India, but he would get it mail order from the U.S. for his acne. And so it's considered to be the most effective OTC acne medication. It's been approved by the FDA. It's on the monograph. It's been considered safe by the FDA all of these years. Now, to the best of our knowledge to date, and I want everybody to think about this, there's never been a reported case of any issue showing some kind of an effect or a relationship between the topical use of benzoyl peroxide and any health issue. And this is in decades and decades of use. Now, that's not to say that there is an issue. But even if we said, you know what, we think there's an issue, we cannot do anything without the FDA. We can't change it. We can't change our labeling. We can't do anything. All of this is controlled by the FDA. So at all companies, and keep in mind, that's Clearasil. That's, think of all the, there's hundreds and hundreds, and maybe, I don't even know, maybe there could be more than 1,000 companies out there, including Proactives, and all of these companies that do benzoyl peroxide. So it we all have to wait for the FDA to provide guidance. And the FDA has not made a statement. Now, oftentimes what the FDA will do, particularly when this is used so widely among every physician, you know, all the prescription benzoyl peroxide products, I mean, think about that have been approved and have gone through extensive testing. So the FDA, oftentimes what they'll do is they'll issue, they may not issue any statement. They may ignore it. They may say, hey, we think it's safe. However, And they may take a long time to look at the testing. They may say, well, how did the lab test this? Did they use the right standards? Is this testing legitimate? Was it tested in an unreasonable way? Is it tested in a way in which this would not occur in your bathroom or your home if you used it properly? So they have to do all of that. And sometimes what they'll do is they'll give manufacturers, let's say, a year or 2 years to say, you know what we want you to do? We want you to provide your own safety studies to show that it's safe. They might say, hey, temporarily or forever, put a warning label on it. This could produce benzene. There's all kinds of things they can do. It's unlikely they're going to remove it because it is such an essential medicine. But you know what I tell people is you just have to decide for yourself whether or not you want to use benzoyl peroxide. Me personally, I don't know what I would do without it. But it's, you know, it's everyone has to kind of make that decision on their own. And but we're doing everything we possibly can to make certain that we're ready with whatever the FDA mandates. That's what we'll do, and we follow every rigorous. We adhere to everything rigorously right now that the FDA requires us to do.
I know this concern has come up with a number of products, from sunscreens to hair products, et cetera. And it doesn't seem like there's been a wide calling across the board to remove the category of product. Mm-mm. But it seems like maybe in certain cases, like certain sunscreens were removed because of the possibility of the benzene exposure.
So what that was is, so first of all, there's two ways that you can produce benzene. In the case of sunscreens, there was a ingredient in the sunscreen that was contaminated with benzene.
Okay.
And so we never had that because luckily, and people may not even have known it at the time, manufacturers, but luckily we were using an ingredient that was not contaminated with benzene. So that was one issue. And so those sunscreens were removed and simply had to be reformulated. Now I'll give you an example of testing that can actually go awry. So University of Riverside in Southern California, they did a test on sunscreens. Now, they picked the most used sunscreen in the world, the chemical, which was oxybenzone, because that's used all over the world more than, let's say at the time, more than zinc or titanium dioxide or whatever. And what they did is the test showed that when you put the sunscreen on and then you go out in the sun, that it produces free radicals. And over time, could those free radicals possibly maybe be a causative factor in skin cancer? Okay, so this is what they were saying. Well, of course, the press got a hold of this and it was just blown up and everything. Oh my God, if you use sunscreen, you're going to get skin cancer. Well, guess what? And everybody said, well, then we need to use zinc and titanium dioxide. Well, then you know what? They came along and they did the study on zinc and titanium dioxide. Same thing happened. That study didn't get much publicity. So we didn't really even think about that. We didn't even really know that. But the other thing is that every physician literally was just up in arms. And they said, you know what? If you put an antioxidant in the sunscreen, this is not even an issue. Now, we've always had antioxidants in our sunscreen. Always. So this is where nobody ever that I know of in history has died of sunscreen. No one. When I spoke to the British Association of Medicine in London, and I was speaking to a lot of dermatopathologists that do a lot of, in Great Britain, that's who removes a lot of the skin cancers and does a lot of the testing. And this physician stood up and said, you know, I remove chunks of people's face. Unfortunately, you can have hideous scarring. I have people that die, malignant melanoma.
Right.
It's fatal 50% of the time. I mean, there's terrible things that happen with skin cancer. But he said, you know, I've never had a patient die of sunscreen.
Right.
Ever.
Right.
So you have to look at things in a you have to really look at things relatively. And the other thing is that, you know, there was also some sunscreen issues having to do with coral. Now, the testing that was done on that was so skewered, I can't even tell you. I won't even go into it, but I can just tell you that, my director of marketing is also has a degree in biology. He's actually got he has laser patents. He's brilliant. And he was able to take that study apart in like 2 seconds and show where it's the equivalent of putting a drop of sunscreen in a swimming pool. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the things like that, we have to look at that. And that's not to say that the study on benzoyl peroxide isn't a real legitimate study. And maybe the lab did a great job. But what does it actually mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's where a lot of the concern and conversation was coming from. A mm-hmm. lot of people saw the headline, you know, just BPO leaks benzene, which is a carcinogen, which causes cancer. And that's why I was getting so many texts and emails, and people were really nervous and concerned. But yeah, like you're saying, I think we have to look at the facts we have and kind of weigh the pros and cons, and each person can do that.
And it's going to be a waiting game. Yeah. I can just tell everybody it's going to be a waiting game, because again, we haven't heard one little squeak from the FDA.
Right.
Not a I mean, you know, they haven't even said, yeah, we saw the article, end of story, nothing. So we're just waiting to see what happens.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see if they say anything. But until then, it's not going to change my personal use of BPO.
So yeah, I'm glad we were able to kind of talk about that a little bit, because I'm sure that there's a lot of curiosity out there.
Absolutely. Yeah. So thank you so much for just being such a great resource and being the first person I reached out to about that. But we just so appreciate your knowledge and expertise. I really think, Jan, your products are the best products I've seen on the market for acne. So I just really credit you with helping so many people transform their skin and helping so many skin professionals help other people.
Well, you know, thank you. And I always say that I'm one of the reasons I do the research and development and do all this is as much for me as anybody. I'm selfish because I don't want acne. I don't want rosacea. I'd like to keep lines and wrinkles away as long as possible. I want young looking, you know, healthy skin as long as I possibly can. And so I'm selfish, and I don't think I'm different from anybody else out there. So the thing is, I don't want another product. I want a solution. And this is what my whole approach is about, providing solutions. And that's exactly what you do, Tessa, is you're about providing a solution, not just selling somebody a product, but you shouldn't even buy a product unless you are convinced and you've got some data or something that shows you that this product is actually going to address a concern and either resolve it or greatly have an effect on it.
Right. Because when it doesn't help, it usually hurts. It perpetuates the problem. Mm-hmm. And I see so many people come to me who just say they wish they would have come to a skin professional sooner, because they would have saved so much money just investing in the right things from the get-go versus going in circles at Sephora, the drugstore, buying all these products from TikTok and social media. So yeah, I'm really proud to retail your products and work with them, and would be happy to treat anyone listening who is interested in finding a solution for their acne.
Well, thank you so much. Gosh, it's always such a pleasure to spend time with you. And
likewise.
I'm glad we were able to get together today.
Me too. We'll have to do another one very soon. But thank you so much for coming on and joining us and blessing us with your presence and your great expertise.
Thank you so much. Okay, well, bye everybody.